Bond. We've heard a lot about you lately. He studied my deputy, and I was pretty sure he was both attracted and annoyed.
Have you now?
He glanced at the sullen one behind him, and to the caballero who had propped an ornately inlaid, pointy-toed boot on the rear bumper of the chariot near the Texas plate.
From these two?
To my surprise, the Hispanic fellow spoke freely. You are the company you keep. The giant man laughed until he wheezed.
Tomas Vidarte here is one of the great vaquero poets. He's in all the anthologies, aren't you, Tom?
He tipped his hat. There's no accounting for taste. Lanier issued a command.
Give us one, Tom.
Vidarte slipped an elongated knife from the back pocket of his jeans and pushed a button, the stiletto blade leaping out into the running lights a good 8 inches. He cleaned his fingernails as he spoke.
Have more than you show. Talk less than you know. Lend less than you owe. Ride more than you go.
The older man shook his head and kicked a slipper at the poet.
That wasn't one of your best.
Well, patron, you get what you pay for. Lanier gestured quickly and nodded at the man behind him.
One of my dim-witted sons, George.
He hunched himself a little forward and looked past me.
Excuse me, Sheriff. Mrs. Tisdale?
She took a step forward and crossed her arms. That's me.
We haven't met formally, but I understand. There was an altercation about the exact location of some fence.
She glanced at George, the one who had just been dismissed. My men said that they were restringing barbed wire near Frenchy Basin when a group of yours came up and threatened them. We all stood there listening to the crickets rubbing their legs together as Eleanor's words hung in the crisp night. I was having one of those "this could be happening 100 years ago" moments when Lanier turned his shoulders and glanced at his son.
That won't happen again.
He returned his gaze on all of us. That I can promise you. I looked back at him, his eyes sunk into the fat of his face.
You travel well armed.
Oh. He reached up and shifted back the brim of his enormous hat.
As you can see, we've spent a lot of time down on the border. Hudspeth County, to be exact. You know the area, Sheriff?
Not particularly.
Whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness.
He shook his head.
It's a war zone down on the border, godforsaken country, and we've just gotten in the habit of being prepared.
He pointed at my sidearm.
As are you.
I put a hand up on one of the building's support poles and thumbed the grain of the wood.
There's a difference between preparing and provoking, Mr. Lanier.
He smiled.
Are we provoking you, Sheriff?
It sounds like your men might have been provoking Mrs. Tisdale's men, and I'd just as soon not have a range war in the southern part of my county. His eyes remained immobile as he continued to smile, and it wasn't an attractive expression on his wide face.
Your county. Till the next general election, the people of this county have elected me to uphold the laws they deem fit to enforce. What about the law of God, Sheriff?
Not particularly in my jurisdiction, Mr. Lanier. He actually chuckled.
Oh, that's all part of our jurisdiction, and beside that fact, I happen to own a portion of your county, Sheriff, almost 12,000 acres, and as far as I know, this is still a free country.
I sighed, suddenly tired of the man and his jingo philosophies. Abide by the laws of the county, state, and federal government, and we won't have any trouble, Mr. Lanier. But if you start anything down here with your neighbors, you're going to see me again. He raised a hand.
I'm a God-fearing man in search of peaceful solitude in which to raise my family. I want nothing of the world, and the world wants nothing of me.
He nodded, as if giving a benediction.
There is a day of reckoning coming, though, a day when all men must take a side, and the freedoms of some may impinge on the heresy and godlessness of others.
I let George come around the truck before I spoke, specifically to him. You need to register this vehicle in Wyoming. He looked at his father, back to me, and then gave the slightest of nods before yanking open the driver's side door. Tomas Vidarte folded his knife and climbed in the bed with his benefactor. Just before George had time to preheat the coil and fire up the diesel, Vic waved and delivered one of my lines.
Happy motoring!
Roy Lanier looked thoughtfully at us from the bed of the truck as they backed up and pulled away in a cloud of smoke, sans a hearty high-o silver. We watched as the big Ford skimmed out of the town proper and then took to the county road, its taillights looking like afterburners headed south.
That was one fucker from Strange.
Eleanor Tisdale sighed.
Which one? Pick.
It was close to midnight when we got back to Durant, and once again all the traffic lights were blinking. Across Main Street there was a newly hung large banner, orange with a black trim, that advertised Friday's big game between the Durant Dogies, whom Vic continually referred to as Doggies, and the Warland Warriors in their epic tiff, and the retiring of one Walt Longmire's jersey and that of Henry Standing Bear, both dutifully displayed on either side of the banner.
69, really?
I shrugged and thought about how I hadn't promised Nancy that I would be there. I'd forgotten my number.
Gives me ideas.
I didn't rise to the bait, so she continued.
I bet you were popular.
I shrugged again. I did all right. She smiled, reading the banner as we drove underneath. I bet old number 32 did better. I thought about the bear and how I'd better make a call out to the Red Pony Bar and Grill if I didn't want to face his ignominy alone. Henry did better than everybody. He still does.
I still want a corsage in the orange and black of the Durant Doggies. Doggies. What the hell is a doggie, anyway?
A doggie is a motherless calf. She studied the storefronts as we drove through town, her thoughts darkening like the windows.
How appropriate. Do you find it worrisome that Cord escaped from or was expulsed by a religious cult, and now we have one setting up camp in our own county?
I glanced at her. Our county?
Yeah, well, I wasn't elected, but I'm de facto.
I thought you were a Moretti.
Ha ha! She poked my shoulder with an index finger. Answer the question.
Yes, I do. I watched the buildings go by and had to admit that I liked the county seat quiet like this. And it's even more worrisome since Tim Berg says the head honcho up at that place in his county also goes by the name of Lanier.
She turned to look at me. You're kidding.
Nope. But we also don't know for sure that our Lanier's place is a cult.
Uh-huh, that conversation had more Bible quotes than a revival meeting.
She thought about it.
You think Cord's mother might be mixed up with this bunch rather than the one in South Dakota?
Not with Sarah coming into the Butte County Sheriff's Office, and the pants Cord had on from Belle Fouche, but there has to be a connection explaining why Cord showed up here.
Other than a grandmother in Short Drop who obviously didn't know that he exists?
Yep.
Considering the newfound information, I think it was very politic of you to not bring up the familial connection between the interstate Lanier's with Eleanor Tisdale.
She readjusted, tucking one boot under the other leg.
So, it sounds like you're getting ready to have a wide-reaching conversation with young Cord.
I am, now that the county psychologist says I can.
What are you going to do about Roy Lanier and his bunch?
I sighed. Not a lot I can do until they do something against the law.
Like walking around shoving their guns in people's faces and cleaning their fingernails with illegal knives?
She mused on the supposed compound to the south.
Your worst nightmare come true.
And Eleanor Tisdale's, since apparently her husband sold the place to them. She nodded to herself and smiled.
So, when are we going to go poke around the East Spring Ranch?
I really didn't have the right, but I was curious, especially with the probable connection with the compound in South Dakota. It was also possible that I just didn't like Roy Lanier and his gun-toting son. Either way, it was important to know what was going on down there in one of the neglected corners of my county. First thing in the morning.
What do you make of the Spanish Blade?
I thought about the man. Doesn't fit, does he?
One severe case of badass, if you ask me.
Why is that?
He wasn't scared, Walt. Considerate, yes, but not scared at all. Anybody else in that situation
would have been just a little bit intimidated, but he wasn't. She waited to make the next statement after I passed the sheriff's office and took a left on Fort.
You're taking me home?
I figured that's where you'd want to go.
Where are you sleeping?
The amazingly affordable and surprisingly comfortable Absaroka County Jail.
I glanced at her.
I figure I better spell Double Tough since he's been babysitting Court all evening.
Then what's he supposed to do?
It was true that my deputy's house was in Powder Junction, a 45-minute drive south. Don't you think he'd like to go home?
Not particularly, considering that Freimeyer's girlfriend is visiting.
I thought about it as I took a right onto DeSmet. Yeah, I guess they share a house. She nodded. A run-down, two-bedroom rental by the creek, from what I hear.
What, you think we can all afford houses on what the county pays us?
We drove along in one of those silences only women can produce. A ponderous, heavy quiet.
For your information, I'm aware that you arranged the financing for my house behind my back.
I pulled up in front of the little gray craftsman with the red door. I have no idea what it is you are talking about.
I saw the papers.
I sat there for a moment and then tried a reverse in the backfield. I may have signed something that said you were an employee in good standing with the sheriff's department. In short, I lied. She didn't laugh, but sat there studying her hands. After a moment, she unsnapped her safety belt, nudged her knees up onto the seat, and slapping my hat into the back, she slid herself across my lap. She grabbed the back of my hair and yanked it, locking her mouth over mine, and I could feel the waves of heat from her body pounding me like surf on a coastal rock. I snuck in the front door of the sheriff's office like a teenager getting in after curfew, and could hear Double Tough snoring on the bench in the reception area. I gave a salute to the painting of Andrew Carnegie, a relic from when our building had been the town library, and quietly climbed the stairs past the 8x10s of all the sheriffs in our county's history, sure their eyes were watching me as I passed. My deputy had dragged out a few pillows and a blanket from the supplies. The noise that he made was horrific, and I figured it was probably for the best that he wasn't sleeping in the holding cells with Cord. The poor kid would be deaf by morning. I also reminded myself that tomorrow was Tuesday, and that I would need to call my old boss, Lucian Connolly, at the Durant Home for Assisted Living, and cancel Chestnut, if I was going to the southern part of the county to loiter with intent. All of these things were roiling in my mind as I kicked an empty Mountain Dew can that Double Tough had left on the floor. I stood there quietly as his snoring stopped, and he spoke.
"You're grounded."
I turned and looked at him, or rather, at the lump of gray wool blanket that passed for him. "How's our charge?"
"Asleep."
He shucked the blanket and blinked at me.
"Chief, you're not going to believe what we did tonight."
"I'm afraid to ask."
"You know the old TV and VCR down in the jail?"
"Yep." He smiled. "I was walking by and saw a box of tapes and that stuff that Ruby's sending off to the church. I was feeling bad because the kid is just sitting in the cell reading his Bible like he's in solitary confinement, so I thought, what the heck? I'll make popcorn in the microwave and we'll watch a movie."
"What did you watch?"
"Well, it's not like we had a lot to choose from. I mean, it was church lady movies."
I leaned against the dispatcher's counter. Maybe that was for the best.
"My Friend Flicka, the one from a million years ago."
"Set in Wyoming. Mary O'Hara wrote the book."
"Yeah, well, they filmed it in Utah. But that's not the point."
He swung his legs down and gathered the covers over his shoulders like a serape.
"Chief, I don't think that kid has ever watched TV or a movie before. I mean, ever."
He stood and leaned an elbow on the counter with me.
"I've never seen anything like it. I about fell asleep every 10 minutes, but that kid was glued to the screen. He laughed and cried like the stuff was happening to him right there in the chair."
"I guess it's possible that..."
"He watched it 3 times.
"I'm sorry."
"That's okay. After the first time, I just started watching him."
He leaned down and picked up the can I'd kicked, crushing it effortlessly in his hand and tossing it into Ruby's wire trash can. "I hope Ruby don't mind, but I gave the kid the tape. I tried to explain that they had these new things, DVDs, but he didn't care. You'd have thought I gave him the friggin' horse."
"Where is he now?"
"Back in holding."
I yawned. I'll check on him, and then I'm going to hit the hay in the other holding cell. I pushed off, seeing as there's no room at the inn. I checked my office on the pass-by, but didn't see Dog, and assumed that he must have been in the back keeping an eye on the young man. I tried to remember what the first movie was that I might have seen, but could come up with nothing. I'd grown up on a northern Wyoming ranch about as far from everything as was possible in what seemed like a different century, but I watched TV and couldn't imagine the kind of lifestyle where young Cord had never seen one. I turned the corner in the dark room, quietly slipped along the wall to where I could see into the holding cell, and was immediately greeted with a rumbling half-bark. Shh! I moved over to the bars and noticed that Double Tough must have changed his mind and decided to close the door. I pulled on it gently, but discovered that it was locked. I glanced around and then reached over and flipped on the light. The only occupant in the cell was Dog. Chapter 4. How long do you think? Double Tough was as flapped as I'd ever seen his unflappable self. An hour at the most. I thought about it. He's on foot. Couldn't have gotten very far. The question is, did he go south or east? You go one way and I'll go the other. But the highway or surface roads, the little idiot's so uninformed that he could be walking along the center stripe of I-25. We were moving toward the doors now, passing the reception area where I had found Double Tough asleep only minutes ago. You want to call in more staff? No, we'll... The phone on Ruby's desk rang, and the two of us looked at each other, my deputy the first to vote. We could ignore it. I sighed. That's not the sheriffing thing to do. I strode back to the desk and snatched it up. Absaroka Sheriff's Department. The line buzzed and then became clear. Walt? Yep. More buzzing, then the voice again. This is Wally Johnson down here on the Lazy DW. I recognized his voice. I had heard Wally many times at the National Cattlemen's Association where he served as counsel. How can I help you, Wally? Buzzing. I'm sorry I'm on this damn cordless down at the barn. You're not going to believe this, but I've got a couple horse thieves down here. I waited a few seconds and then attempted to establish some priorities. Wally, is this something we could discuss tomorrow? His turn to pause. You mean you want me to let them go? I thought about the location of Wally and Donna's ranch, just a little south of town on the secondary road. You mean you've got them, got them? Yes. I glanced over at Double Tough and marveled at our good fortune. 5 more seconds and we would have been out the door. Is one of them a skinny kid, blonde with blue eyes? Yeah, says his name is Cord. Who is the other one? There was a brief scrambling and some conversation in the background, and then the rancher came back on the line. Old fella says his name is Orrin Porter Rockwell, though I kind of find that hard to believe. I thought of the Book of Mormon in the young man's possession. Orrin the Mormon. Excuse me, Walt? Darn this cordless. Nothing. I readjusted the little cradle on Ruby's phone against my shoulder. You say you've got them there? Yeah, Bruce Eldridge is staying with us on his way back to Cody and was coming home from a friend's house and said there were 2 idiots out in the north pasture running around trying to catch the horses by hand. Hell, Walt, that's rough stock. They're lucky one of those horses didn't kick their brains out. Can you hold them till I get there? Sure. Donna's got a shotgun on them right now, but the kid came up to my truck and volunteered your number, said you were probably looking for him. And the other one? He's a pretty old, hippie-looking fella, and he's still winded from chasing those horses all over the damn place. I thought he was going to have a heart attack. There was some talking in the background. What? More talking. Yeah, that's probably true. Wally? The rancher came back on the line, but I could hear his hand cupping the receiver to his mouth in an attempt to keep this portion of the conversation between the two of us. The boy says that it wasn't anything like my friend Flicka. His voice dropped even lower. Walt, I've only been around this kid for 20 minutes, but he's something strange on that movie. I think he's brought it up about 12 times, and he's carrying an old VHS tape of the film with him. When we got to the Lazy DW, the two outlaws were sitting in the calving shed adjoining the main barn, the place where cowboys stayed on call during the time in the early spring when the cow mothers did their duty. I'd seen all kinds of calving sheds in my life, some just dirt floor lean-to shanties with a snubbing pole in the middle, to heated buildings with entertainment centers and rows of comfortable sofas on which to sit back and while away the half-sleep hours through the nights when most heifers decide to thicken the herd. The lazy DW was the latter and not the former, and through the glass panel in the breezeway door I could see our two would-be horse thieves watching my friend Flicker in studious rapture. I glanced at Wally, and especially at Donna, still holding the shotgun. There were rumors about Donna Johnson. In my experience, you couldn't swing a dead trench coat without hitting all kinds of folks who claimed to have worked for the CIA, but I'd heard the rumors about Donna, and my suspicions that she had indeed been employed by that organization were based on the fact that she never talked about it. Never. She shrugged. It is the only place we had a VCR. I studied the old man seated next to Cord on the edge of one of the leather sofas. He was smallish, with silver hair hanging past his shoulders that feathered into a dark brown, and with a beard that stretched to the third button of his old-fashioned tab-collar shirt. Around his neck was a scarf with a pattern that made it look almost like a prayer shawl. He was the man who had waved at me on the street in Durant. I glanced at the screen and could see Riley McDowell on the back of a horse racing hell-bent for leather across the green hills of a cinematic Wyoming, Reed, Utah. Rockwell was leaning forward with his wrists resting on his knees and his gnarled hands gripping imaginary reins. You didn't see hands like that much anymore. The fingers were thick, and I could see where the knuckles, especially those of the fore and middle fingers, had been broken numerous times. There was only one type of activity that would sustain that kind of mutation. So whatever type of hippie Orin the Mormon was, he hadn't been a peace-loving man. Pushing the door open, I stepped into the room with Double Tough covering the doorway. Cord immediately stood and smiled at me. "Hi, Sheriff." The older man ignored us completely and began imitating the movements of the horsemen on the screen, exerting a body English in an attempt to keep young Roddy in a saddle. Cord looked up at me as I watched the Orin character. The boy glanced back at the man and then up to me again. "He's never seen the movie before." I smiled. "You mean this movie?" He started to speak but then stopped. "There are others?" I stared at the young man's face just to make sure he wasn't pulling my leg. "Yep." I glanced back at Double Tough and watched as he put a thumb and forefinger at the corners of his mouth to keep from smiling as I turned back to the boy. "Thousands of them. Probably millions." He stood there, looking at me askance, and then gestured toward the television. "Like this?" "Well, not exactly like this, although I think there are a couple of sequels to this one."
"What's a sequel?"
Behind me, Double Tough smothered a laugh. Look, we'll talk about that later." I gestured toward the oblivious man with my chin. "You know this fellow?"
"Uh-huh."
"He kidnap you?"
I guess."
I rested the web of my thumb on the hammer of my Colt. "He did or he didn't?"
"Well, he asked me to go with him, but I told him I'd rather stay, and then he said we ought to go, so I did."
"That probably wasn't going to hold up in court.
Where were you going?"
"He didn't say."
I shook my head. "Are you in the habit of following people just because they tell you to?"
We both turned when the man who called himself Orin Porter Rockwell made a noise in his throat as the horse on the screen leaped into a corner fence and fell, tangled and kicking. Cord's eyes turned back to me.
"Him, I do."
"He's a friend of yours?"
"He's my bodyguard."
I tipped my hat back on my head and stared at the young man.
"You have a bodyguard?"
He shrugged.
"I guess. He looks after me."
"Where's he been for the last few weeks?"
"Looking for me."
I sighed and glanced past the boy to the man.
"Well, I guess he found you."
I took a few steps, placing myself directly in the man's line of sight. He leaned to the side and then shifted over to where he could get a better view, completely ignoring me.
"Sir?"
His face stayed on the screen, so I reached around behind me and punched the button, turning off the set. A cry escaped him again, and he was immediately on his feet with his hands between us, but it wasn't a threatening gesture. Rather, the fingers were splayed with palms up in a beseeching manner.
"Sir, please!"
Like the boy, his eyes were the amazing thing about him, but whereas the young man's were like sapphires, his were a pale blue, almost to the point of being white. Opals. The horse is endangered. I stood there looking at the irises, unable to help myself, at least until the smell got to me, forcing me to lean back a little. It'll be fine. At least, he has been the other 27 times I've seen it. I turned and hit stop, then eject, and pulled the tape out, returning it to the cardboard sleeve. Rockwell's eyes followed my hands, as if I were holding the Hope Diamond. Mr. Rockwell, I presume?
Yes, sir.
Denite, man of God, son of thunder. He actually smiled.
Yes. Do you know me, sir?
Only by reputation. I'm going to need you to come with us, Mr. Rockwell. His grin faded.
Am I under arrest?
Not yet, but I'm working on it.
I won't be arrested.
I started to reach toward his shoulder, but he dipped and took a half step back.
I won't have hands laid on me, neither.
We stood there looking at each other, the age-old standoff between arrester and arrestee, the moment where everybody, both inside and outside, the law had to commit. I smiled. Pretty sure I could take him. Anyway, I didn't think I wanted to expose the boy to a wrestling match, so instead I leaned down a little and gazed into the luminescent eyes as I brought the videotape up between us.
I'll let you watch the rest of Flicka.
Orin Porter Rockwell! Double Tough's voice carried across the room to my ears, muffled under the blanket that covered my face. It was my turn on the wooden bench.
Find anything?
I smiled as he continued to punch buttons on the keyboard of Ruby's computer like a monkey trying to find a way to fit the square pegs in round holes.
Well, yeah. Still having fun?
I listened as he leaned back in the desk chair.
He's a murderer.
I know. According to history, about 100 people, and the attempted assassination of the governor of Missouri, for one. I joined him at the computer where there was a photo of a man who appeared to be a 40-year-old version of the one watching my friend Flicka in the basement. Double Tough leaned back in his chair and pointed.
That's him. He's younger there, but that's him.
Well, that would figure. I looked over his shoulder. Since according to this, he's 200 years old. The similarity was uncanny and patently impossible. When I read the name in the book, some warning bells went off, but not loud enough to really catch my attention. Then, when Cord referred to him the way he did, I started putting two and two together. I gestured with a hand, introducing Double Tough to one of the most intriguing and mythical historical figures of the American West. Meet Orin Porter Rockwell, Danite, man of God, son of thunder, and the strong right arm of the prophets of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, commonly known as the Mormons, Joseph Smith Jr. and Brigham Young.
No shit!
The Danites were kind of a Mormon vigilante arm that exacted what they called blood atonements. And he was one of the chieftains, but he was also a mountain man, a gunfighter, and even a deputy marshal at one point. I leaned in even further and read the description. He was that most terrible instrument that can be handled by fanaticism. A powerful physical nature welded to a mind of very narrow perceptions, intense convictions, and changeless tenacity. In his build, he was a gladiator, in his humor, a Yankee lumberman, in his memory, a Bourbon, in his vengeance, an Indian. A strange mixture only to be found on the American continent.
Double Tough straightened up and stretched his back. He's also very fond of my friend Flicka.
Yep, a true devotee.
And as Lucian would say, and I would second, crazy as a waltzing pissant.
That too. I yawned. I'll have Vic run his prints through the IAFIS and we'll find out which bin he escaped from. Then we'll go from there.
What about the kid?
I don't know. His grandmother wants him, but we've got to find the mother.
Wouldn't that be South Dakota's job?
I folded my hands into church and steeple, burying my nose in the front door. Strictly speaking,
no fucking way!
I raised my hat up and looked at my undersheriff, who, despite the landscape, appeared to be enjoying driving my truck, and then
shifted around to glance at the Cheyenne Nation studying the ancient copy of the Book of Mormon in the back seat.
Let me guess, these sublime surroundings do not meet with your picturesque approval.
I told Henry Standing Bear that our numbers were being retired at the high school this weekend, and the rambling conversation that ensued had included the jaunt to South Dakota, and the bear had decided to come along.
Vic nodded.
What's the next town in the land that time forgot?
I glanced around, getting a reading. Beulah, at the state line.
Does the scenery change a lot at the border?
Not particularly. I shook my head and looked at her, noticing how the two black eyes were transmuting to purple and yellow.
Haven't you ever driven this way?
Not sober.
After a moment of smiling at herself and at Henry in the rearview mirror, she spoke again.
So what's in Beulah other than a shell station?
Ranch A.
What the hell is Ranch A?
I raised my hat up to block the full-on sunshine that slanted through the side window and thought about how the sleeping portion of the trip might be formally over.
A is for Annenberg.
She threw me a little tarnished gold over the purple and yellow.
Annenberg as in the Philadelphia Annenbergs?
Yep.
I gestured to the right. Just over those gently rolling hills is one of the most beautiful ranches in all of Wyoming. Evidently, the Annenbergs thought it was a nice place to stop. I placed my hat back over my face as the